Okay. All right. So in terms of Malachas Machshavas. So just a few more words of introduction. We introduced it a little bit last time, but I want to refocus on the introduction for a moment. Part of the difficulty of this sugya is that we don't really have one sugya coming and defining what it's about. It's not actually so unprecedented in terms of Shabbos, but nonetheless, it's especially true here. With Malachas Machshavas, we are working from evidence. We're working from basically scattered evidence. We know that the Gemara tells us that there is such a concept, really kind of agav, right? The whole surprise that the Torah doesn't spell it out in the parsha that we just read this past Shabbos. It is possible that not everyone in the Gemara itself acknowledges Malachas Machshavas. We talked about that a little bit in the past, and we talked about Malachas Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. You may have noticed here, for example, if you did the Misaseh Gemara, the Gemara in Krisus, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that it could be that maybe the way Rashi might understand the Mandamra, the Gemara there, as not even acknowledging Malachas Machshavas, which there's some room to do, because the Torah doesn't explicitly link it to Shabbos. It's more through Smichas Taparshias, and those who have learned the first parak of Yevamos know that it's possible that we don't use smuchen as a technique, as a method in all of the Torah, maybe only in Dvarim. So we have kind of a shaky foundation for Malachas Machshavas, somewhat of a machlokus if it even exists, one of those mysterious characters no one's ever seen in real life. So it's somewhat of a question if it really exists. And then once we assume it exists, which clearly is the overwhelming consensus today, that Malachas Machshavas not only exists but is impacting on almost every din that we see in Halacha Shabbos, so then we have to work backwards to try to figure out what it means. So we don't have clear sugya that says, you know, Heichan Malachas Machshavas, here are the basic details. So what we know is we work backwards, that we see a few Gemaras that talk about it, and we also see a few Rishonim and a few Achronim who invoke it. So we need to try to put together all the parts to make up the puzzle. And since we're working backwards, and some of the sources are later and some of the sources are earlier, so once we see that even in the Gemara itself, it's not clear that Malachas Machshavas is an agreed upon principle, certainly in terms of the later Svarim, so we can't always be sure that any one daya is agreeing with any other daya. So we mentioned last time a number of elements where Malachas Machshavas comes up, so even if we could somehow navigate a path to make it all work together, we recognize that they don't have to all work together, because there's no evidence that any one view acknowledges every one of these references as being accurate. So we work with what we have, and we try to figure out if there is a thesis that accommodates all of it, and if it's necessary for a thesis to accommodate all of it. And it's going to, by necessity, based on what we just said, particularly today, some points I'd like to mention because they are interesting, gets us into the area that's going to look a little pilpulish. I think, Tuvia, who did you quote when you told me that pilpul is defined as not everyone acknowledging the hanachas might be different? Okay, I think you heard somebody saying that.
Yeah, I think someone said that opposite
of that. Okay, so Abraham Karmi, whoever it was, so there's a method called pilpul, which is often derided. The reason it's derided is because it builds a whole palace which may not be so sturdy, because it assumes the words mean the same thing in every context, that the principles that are being invoked are always working off of the same understandings. So here too, we always run the risk of that with Malachas Machshavas, because there's so many different starting points. And especially today, so I'll mention some things which may sound very pilpulish, and we'll acknowledge Meirosh that we have to figure out whether or not the understandings are comparable enough to allow for these structures to be created. And if they are not, so at least it serves the purpose that everything else serves, of identifying some clue of at least how some have perceived what Malachas Machshavas is meant to convey to us. Okay, and a couple of other questions to keep in mind. We mentioned also one of the ways in which we look for clues to Malachas Machshavas, besides sources that we're aware of that explicitly identify it, but even if we're not aware of those sources, So we'll tend to guess that if something is unique to Shabbos, so then maybe it is a Malachas Mashabbos issue. Because why else should it be unique to Shabbos? So the answer is, there is a why else. There were a few other reasons why something might be unique to Shabbos. Right, we marked them down last time. Include Mishkan connections. Right, that might maybe something different than Malachas Mashabbos. Maybe something is unique to Shabbos because of its Mishkan attitude. Also, maybe that whole Maisa result distinction. And then we saw that there was perhaps the majority view in the later Svarim that Shabbos is focused on you're doing something specifically, you're disturbing your rest, which isn't necessarily connected to Malachas Mashabbos, but you might find that Shabbos may be different from other areas of Halacha for those reasons. So if we're going to use the unique Shabbos relevance as a clue to Malachas Mashabbos, so we need to also be aware of these possible distractions, which may be other reasons why Shabbos is perhaps singled out. Right, so we had first four things over here which indicated that Shabbos, that Malachas Mashabbos, at least according to one view or another, was kavana, kavanistic, right? It was something that seems to be related to one's intent, right? Anyone remember those? Right, Malachas Shena Tzvich Lagufa. Right, Davar She'eino Miskaven, Misasek. And what was the fourth? Right, so these are four dinim. None of them, almost none of them, are explicitly affiliated with Malachas Mashabbos. The closest you get is Misasek, because that's my focus in the Gemara. But the rest you need the Rishonim to invoke. But it's likely that these four all have some connection to Malachas Mashabbos. And they all seem to be Kavana related. So Mashabbos as Machshava, right? We mentioned the word Machshava. Mashabbos seems to connote two related but different ideas. Machshava meaning your thoughts, and Chashivas meaning that which has importance. And again, this is a connected term. But these four were all in the sense of Machshava. We also mentioned that Davar She'eino Miskaven is a little bit unique here because it's not a Shabbos-specific concept. It's a concept that exists b'chol Torah Kula, but we saw some ways in which Malachas Mashabbos potentially intensifies its importance. So therefore, Malachas Mashabbos is going to play a role there as well. And Malachas Mashabbos L'Gufa was Machlokas in the Rishonim. Could be that it has to do with the Mishkan connection more than Malachas Mashabbos. But also, if you're showing to bring this up, very little of this is really explicitly from a uncontrovertible source, but it's all probably related. Right, so then we saw about eight other dinim, which also may relate to exemptions of Malachas Mashabbos. The one that we mentioned first is the bridge, right, Makalkel. Right? You remember Asher Weiss talks about these examples. And he argues on the Kiryas Sefer, because the Kiryas Sefer says in Makalkel it's a Kavana idea, because you probably don't have full Kavana if you're doing something disruptive. So we saw, as he noted, that's a little bit hard to swallow. We liked a little bit better what Sammy said, that maybe if we use the Malach Shem Shrich L'Gufa definition of a positive action versus a negative action, the perception of most of the Rishonim, so then Makalkel, being a negative action, is missing a commonality with the paradigmatic Malacha, the general concept of Malacha. There's something that's missing in its comparison to any act of Kilgul because of Malachas Mashabbos. What would you think, by the way, just parenthetically, we were talking about this last time, but it's just interesting to know if there's a discussion about this. So what would you think about something that starts off as a productive act that ends up as a kill call? So is it overlap in that way? Like, what would you say, for example, if you shechted an animal and it turned out to be a trefa, or a recent shochun?
Is that a different type of... Is that...
Now you just have a dead animal. You could have had a useful animal before you.
Well, it's connected to...
connected to the Sase, Kaso.
That's not focused Rishonim about whether he's Hasid, because he's talking about the same object or a different object.
Okay.
I think you would say that it's the same object, so that you could very well say that that's a Sase, and it wouldn't be enough to do the initial Sase, but if it's if a Sase is Dabda on a separate object, so then you could, then you would probably have to, I mean, this might be connected with, like, I don't know if you could necessarily bring in a Zedek, the philosophy of Shiva self bonus.
Hmm. See, well, I'll leave that part. What about the Tchilasso Vesofo part? Because it raises an interesting question, which is a topic of a lot of discussion. What is the focus in terms of Machshava? Is the focus your intent, or is the focus the result? And where if they're at odds with each other, right? So sometimes that's the whole concept of fact, they're at odds with each other. But what if the significance of them being at odds with each other is that one is considered Machshavas and one isn't? Right, that your intent was productive, but the result was destructive. What do we look at in order to define machshavas? So that's a discussion in itself. What were some of the other examples here? Kalahiyad. Sorry? That we actually didn't really talk about so much. That goes back to the whole Maisa question. Maybe we brought it as an example, but we weren't sure if it should be on the list. Hafishir was one. Anyone else? Right, Amy Miskayemes. What about things put in a kli? Like you carry something in a kli that's bigger than a shear? Right, we only focus on the object itself, not on the container. Right, what else? Remember the Rebbeinu Chananel about using the altar? That's a lack of leches machshavas, because you're intent to do it for consumption and not for malacha. Right. Ksav al gabe ksav was brought up as an example by some of the Rishonim and Gittin. Right. And also the malacha of a cut, according to the Kedushin HaRib. And so all of these were invoked by either earlier or later Svarim as cases where, and the Kalkel here again is probably the closest to being based on a Gemara, because the Gemara in Chagiga sounds like that. Klaachar Yad is really from the Nosa Kalim and the Shulchan Aruch. We discussed also the different types of Klaachar Yad. It could be that there are Shinuyim, there's a concept of the Shinui elsewhere in Halacha, but Shabbos is a broader concept of the Shinui, extending also to how you do things and not just how things are done. Eina Miskayemes is really from the Rishonim. Chatzi Shir is mostly from the Rashbam. These are also all from the Rishonim or from the Achronim. So again, we have very little that's really incontrovertible. Right? Kli is in the Rishonim. Like we mentioned also, I'll be asked that the Papa Yitzchak has an essay about this Shabbos, which first shows that Shabbos is emistic and that we focus on what you're really doing. Okay, so here we have these two different meanings of machshava, which machshava or machshavas, right? So machshavas as machshava and machshavas as chashivas. That's what it sounds like you're talking about here. So, can these be accommodated by one theory? Or is it simply two different expressions of what machshavas means? All right, so keep that thought in mind. Yeah, Sandy.
I mean, you make something chashuv by having machshava for it.
Yeah, so that's true to a certain extent, right? So then, but it still manifests itself in different senses, because this is still, I think that's why the word chashivas and machshava are connected etymologically. Mm-hmm. But it's still not one expression of malachas machshavas, and that's why we have the suffix in that word machshavas applies to. But they work together in tandem, or they say the word is broad enough to accommodate two different meanings.
No, meaning, let's say for example, if you were trying to do a composition.
See, another question, which we also touched upon last week, which so clearly, but let's try to keep it in mind here also, is let's look at the phrase itself, right?
Malachas machsheves. So, is this one word or two?
Basically, is it that the malacha on Shabbos has to be malachas machsheves, or does it have to be a malacha that is machsheves? In other words, is the definition of a malacha something which is machsheves, or is machsheves a condition in malacha? And a malacha is a malacha by itself, but to be chayav for it, it has to be machsheves. Right, we mentioned last time that the Rambam Zambel thought this was my focus between Rashi and the Rambam, if you remember this, that he thought that Rashi believes that malachos are malachos by themselves, and machsheves is a condition. And the Rambam believes that machsheves is the whole essence of a malacha. And that's why the Rambam allows a more generous interpretation of an av. Anything that shares the function of a malacha is an av, because machsheves is the whole story. But the Rashi sees machsheves as more independent entities. Sees malachas as more independent entities. So a malacha can be a malacha by itself, but it may not be chayiv unless it's machsheves. Yes, sir.
Does that mean that Rashi is saying it would be a masa avera, but it wouldn't be chayav?
Something along those lines. Yeah, it's a convenient way to express it. Something along those lines. That basically, a malacha is a malacha, but there's a condition, it has to be machsheves. So what difference does it make? First of all, it's very relevant to our whole question here of understanding the role of machsheves in the malacha. But to mention some nafkaminas of that question. So the one that Rabbi Nachman Zemba talks about has to do with shiur. Right? If something is missing, is lacking a shiur, so is that a fundamental flaw? The halacha is nothing? Or is it a patur? So that seems to be a machlokas Rambam and Rashi. Because we seem to acknowledge that if somebody carries something two amos for shusar avin, that's called a chatzi malacha. That's really pretty much nothing on a level of Torah. And the Rambam groups that with chatzi shir, with carrying something which is too small. While Rashi has two different understandings. Rashi does not seem to connect those two. That carrying something that's too small is chatzi shir, asur min haTorah. And walking two amos, that's nothing, that's not asur min haTorah. There's two separate concepts. One is a malacha that doesn't even get off the ground. And the other is a malacha, but it's lacking chashivas, it's lacking machsheves. And we see this distinction in the Tosas, that very small Tosas, on Daf Ayin Gimel Bar Aleph, that asks how come there are certain shiurim that are mentioned in the Mishnah and certain shiurim that aren't. The shiurim that are mentioned in the Mishnah are definitional. You don't have those, you don't have a malacha. And the shiurim that are not mentioned are conditional. You have a malacha without them, you just aren't chayav. And you may recall that the way the Avnei Nezer expressed it, if you're missing the shiurim in the Mishnah, you're lacking in malachas. If you're missing the shiur of a grogeris, you're lacking in machsheves. It separates the term into two halves. There's a definition of a malachas. It's all consistent with the Nachum Zemba. That last point was made by the Avnei Nezer, but it's consistent with his understanding of, let's say, Rashi. So all of that, everything we just said, that all flows from seeing machsheves as a condition, but not as the definition of a malachas. A malachas exists by itself, but if you want it to be chayiv, it has to be machsheves. It doesn't define what a malacha is. I saw another point that was raised. It's very not practical, like a lot of this isn't so practical, but there would also presumably be a nafkamina about this. I think we discussed in the past the question that's highly theoretical, if at best, in terms of the avos, and the question of what do the avos do if they weren't sure if they should be keeping Shabbos or not. And at the avos, they fulfill the whole Torah voluntarily. So
So that was one of the suggestions. The question is, what should they do about Shabbos to fix?
Right,
so that was part of that discussion, right? If the assumption was that if they're Jewish, they should be keeping Shabbos. If they're not Jewish, they shouldn't be keeping Shabbos. So the whole literature about what did they do, right, which is built on a number of premises. You know, one, that they were real briskers, you know, in terms of how they went about their identity, but also that not only are we not sure what the Elbows were, but the Elbows themselves were not sure, and were living these brisker existences, doing everything we suffic, which is a little bit of a challenging premise, but it generates a lot of fascinating literature. So Rav Yosef Engel, in the Beis HaOtzer, so he asks the question, the idea that an Akum shouldn't keep Shabbos. So what if an Akum does Malacha, but it's not Malacha's Machshavos? Is that Chilul Shabbos defined in those terms? Correct. So he was Machal Shabbos, let's say he did a Malacha Shuvitzvitha Lugufa, if that's the correct terminology. So it's a Malacha, that's not Machshavos. So he assumes that would be an effective trick here. It would be Chilul Shabbos for the Akum, but not for the Jew. Which makes it sound, again, like the Malacha is defined independently. It just happens to be that in order to be chayiv, it has to be machshavos. Okay, again, not incredibly practically relevant, but just illustrative, perhaps, of this distinction. Now the question is, though, if you want to maintain like that, if you want to maintain as a clause that the malacha gets defined by itself, and machshavos is a clause in order to be chayiv, so it is interesting that we have a whole other category here, right? What was in this third category? Right, situations where Malachas Machshavos gets you in trouble. Right, yes, sir?
If you're going to say that there's a separate category of Malacha, that violates Shabbos in some realms, but doesn't violate Shabbos in other realms?
Well, what I say is that it's called the Malacha. Now, what the consequences of it being Malacha are unclear.
Both suggestions that you violate it somewhat.
Yeah, well, in some sense that it's a malacha. Yeah, so whatever that
means. That's a malacha in the negative connotation on the day, not just a term for describing an action.
Maybe because it has enough to be, let's say, that's a drabbanon or enough to be a
or a grave or a kilo shalos for an akum.
Okay, so yeah.
That means that part is side, just for akum.
Right. Fascinating
concept. Where do you even see the idea that there's a second type of violation of shalos that could possibly exist?
Well, there are lower levels of Chilul Shabbos to exist.
There are lower levels of Chilul Shabbos in one framework. Where do you see that there are two frameworks of Malacha?
I'm not sure if there's any difference. I think it's all on one continuum. But perhaps, for example, when we talked about Malacha Shrin Tzvichu Lugufa, which may or may not be an example of this, it's the self focus. So we saw that very likely had that structure. We saw, first of all, we are assuming Lahalacha from Malacha Shrin Tzvichu Lugufa is Mr. Rabban. But we saw that, besides the fact that itself is a machlokas with the Rambam and Rabbi Huda maintaining its nisur deraisa, but that there was a strong view among the later svarim that it's a particularly chomer drabana, or even a deraisa that's punk. So it seems to be acknowledging, I think, something very similar, that it's a malacha that doesn't make the cut.
I mean, it seems to be still the same framework that just doesn't make the cut, whereas using the metaphor malachos for the elbows. So that would have to be obviously the Doraisa.
Right. Or yeah, maybe
fine,
not.
But
enough of a malacha to be
enough of a malacha, it seems like that would be the way you're presenting it with different shear and different things. So I was saying just deficiency in somebody else, we're saying, oh, it's not this, but it is that, it's different. I'm not sure how far you can move away from malacha and malachos machshavos.
Not
really just stepping down the same framework.
I'm not sure if I'm totally seeing the difference between, let's say, that Malach and Shikhul Guf, for example, and this. I think they all fit within the same continuum. It could go back to this question, just whether Machshavos is such a fatal flaw that it defines it as something else. But I think it all still fits into the same framework. Gil?
So this definitional...
You're being serenaded at the same time.
This definitional question between Rashi and the Rambam in terms of like what if
it's your theme song from now on.
If someone actually did something wrong at all by doing something that's not Malachim HaShevet, does that have enough meaning for someone to get benefit from what was
It might. We accept that, and we generally find, I hear the theory, I don't think in practice it's going to play out, because we generally find that Maisa Shabbos is Mrs. Rabbanu completely.
Right.
But it's a valid point to raise in other contexts, you know, the question of whether the action was bad or just something wrong to do. That does tend to affect its partner, usually. So it's a fair structural question in general. I think it's going to have a hard time finding an example in this context.
Why is it being Darabanan?
Because since we find that even flat out Chol Shabbos Daraisa benefiting from it is at most the Darabanan, so it doesn't leave us much room for nuance. But the theoretically, it's an interesting area to explore. So, where do we find Melachas Machshavas as a Machayev? Sammy?
Perhaps it's not what I'm going to stop.
Except there it's a Ptur.
No, I thought they said that Shabbos that it would be Machayev, even the Vaisa, you know?
Yeah, I think what you're thinking of is Chol Tofes.
Yeah,
so sorry. I'll mention that. We'll list that as a second example, but I'll just explain what you're talking about, because the first example is more fundamental. But there is a machlokas between the Rashba and the Ran. And this is a very, very often quoted source in Tulfa Shabbos and Masechta Shabbos. We talked about it earlier in the year. It's one of the things throughout this whole discussion, which it just kedadit all by itself anyway, that the Rashba says that we know there's a rule when it comes to Gidin, for example. So if you have an obligation to write the letters for a get, so writing means writing and not unwriting. And we call Kotokos that if you have black space and you carve a letter out of the black space, so then that's not called writing, that's negative writing. That's not called Ksiva. So the Rashba says, well, you know what's not a problem with Kotokos? If you turn a Ches into a Zayin, you take out the middle of the ceiling by the Ches, so then you have two Zions. So that's not a Chol Tofes problem, because you're chayiv for that on Shabbos. So the Ran says, no, you can't bring a proof from Shabbos. Why not? Because, I'm glad you're all enjoying, because it's just a very labored exugia. And you can't bring a proof from Shabbos because Malachas Machshavas. That apparently Shabbos makes this process of writing more a tekshiva than you find in other areas of halacha. So basically, what the Ran is being mechadish there is that there's an action which other areas of halacha would not exactly other areas of halacha would not acknowledge, and hopefully Shabbos makes us acknowledge. And there are other comparable examples that you see. There are a lot of other examples that are less famous than this Ran. Ran is probably the most well-known, other than the one thing we'll talk about in a second. But this Ran is the most well-known. Maybe you saw the Tosfos about Kishalakum put on the Mar Mokomos. Right, so some areas where we're more machmir on the Shabbos. The same way, until now, we were looking for kulus in Shabbos that were an indication of Melachas Machshavas. Sometimes if Rishonim suggests a Chumrah in Shabbos, it's also taken as indicative of Melachas Machshavas. So, for example, the Gemara Avodah Zarah says that by Bishul Akum, that if Akum cooked something, but he didn't mean to cook it for food, he threw something into the fire so it would become hardened. So then it's not Bishul for the purposes of Bishul Akum. So Tosfos says we see that it is Bishul for the purposes of Bishul on Shabbos. Tosa says, well, we're more machmir on Shabbos. We're more machmir, so the music gets stronger in order to emphasize the ascending level of chumrah.
So it also goes into the same category?
Is there a window that goes
there?
It takes up a lot of space. All right, so we'll learn to live with it. All right, this becomes an ongoing problem. We're going to have to... Okay, thank you. His own theme song. Okay, so that Tosfos and Avodah Zarah is very similar, assuming that's what Tosfos means. But you find sources in general where there's an act which other areas of halacha would not take seriously, and Shabbos takes seriously, either explicitly or implicitly, because of halacha of Shabbos.
Hi.
Which case? Yes, so that's the case, but that's a Gemara.
Well,
even though we don't know how to interpret it, sorry.
For a Bishul Akum, the Rav says you're on Shabbos in that case?
No, Bishul Akum was about the closest. The Gemara says that the Bishul Akum you're not chayav for. So Tosa says, but in a similar case in Shabbos, you are chayav.
Uh-huh.
So Tosa says, well, we're more machmer on Shabbos. So it sounds like Tosa is saying, you don't have to read it this way, sounds like Tosa is saying that it's Malachas Machshavas issue. You could argue with that interpretation, which you might want to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think at least for Bishul Akum, it's more the intentionality of the action that we're trying to, there are all these clues about Bishul Akum, about clearly, if the right stirred the pot as you put something, would that mean that less visual?
No, so I agree there are many reasons to distinguish. This example is weaker than the Quran.
It also doesn't say that Shabbos is more common.
We have to speak louder over the until Gil is successful in his mission.
I'm saying in total, visual acting in general, we're not worried about the action, we're about the intention.
I agree with you that there's a lot to distinguish between the two. And this example is weaker, just throwing on a list. As another case where there are chumras in Shabbos, which have been interpreted possibly as reflecting Malachas Machshavas. I've been enjoying so much. Yes?
I don't think this is the other example you're looking for, but if we're saying that Dover Shem Muscovin is going to be implicit because it's lacking Malachas Machshavas, are we saying that Sig Ratio Spy is because it has Malachas Machshavas?
Possibly. You're right. I think we brought it up last time. But it's not a perfect example, but it's just undoing this Ptur. Right, so it only becomes necessary because we patented it in the first place.
It's still a sort of culture of the land.
Right, so it's a weak example for a few reasons. But we could leave it at these two. We can talk about the Gemara Bava Kamma. And you know, other examples which are best represented by the Ran. And most explicitly. So this, the Gemara Bava Kamma, right, so we saw that this will a little bit segue into our Chazara, because we'll start with Zorah. But the Gemara of Bava Kamma tells us that when it comes to the Zikin, if you use the wind to transmit your fire, and you're using to damage something, so it's not so clear you're chayav for that. But when it comes to Shabbos, there is a chiyuv. Zorah, v'ruach nesayaso, you're chayav. If you use the wind to disperse the substance you're trying to separate, that's a halacha, it's zara. So there's a back and forth in the Gemara about this, but the dominant line is halachas machshavas. So we saw that there are two trends in Rishonim, which carries through into the Achronim. We spent some significant time on the Magen Avraham and the Eben HaOzer. Right, there's two trends in Rishonim and Achronim. As to what the Gemara means by that. Does it mean something unique to Zorah? Right, the Rush sounds like that. And the Magen Avraham thought like that. That Zorah requires this, and therefore it's Malachas Machshavas court. Or is it something possibly broader, like Rashi sounds like, and the Adrama sounds like, and the Eben HaOzer understood, that if your plan gets carried out, that's called Malachas Machshavas, and you're chayav for that. Now the question is also worth reviewing and fleshing out, is if you take a broader view, it's easier to say, if you say Zorah is a quirk, and it's an exception, then you don't have to deal with broad Shabbos questions so much. But if you say that this is a rule for all of Shabbos, that if your plan gets carried out, Malachas Machshavas is a machayev, then we have to swear this is a different Gemara. What do we have to swear it with? Grama. And so we know that Grama on Shabbos is Pater, so how is this different than Grama? So the three possible mahalakim to take. Sammy?
Besides Grama, why does she have a problem with all of them for Shabbos?
Except that there, assuming if Mekalkel is itself a Malacca, perhaps.
Yeah, meaning but, like a culture of the Hittite and Malacca, right? So why wouldn't that be us? Because even though you need the Avar, since you're a Kabbalah, it can be...
Okay, here from an abstract, lumdish way, we'd have to square everything.
Right.
But here, this is even more direct. What does the Ptur of Grama mean? Right? What does it mean to say you're off the hook if you just cause something? If you cause the wind to disperse the substance, Malachas Machshavas makes you chayiv. No success. What was that in Machshavas?
Someone to
okay. All right, so both, well, so far what was happening, not Shafto, but it might be a Grama. Right, so maybe you'll was able to cause something to be successful there. So,
Grama there may be a separation between the person and the action.
Okay, so how are we defining that separation?
Being combined with Shabbos, you're doing something, but it's not enough. But Grama is where you're causing something else to occur through something else.
But doesn't that basically boil down to the same thing? Unless you're saying that it's always going to
yeah.
It goes back to the whole Zohar court. Sort of. And see, some of the different ways in which you find... It's a kasha. To begin with, you have an issue to figure out. If we're going to say that is chayiv, then you have to figure out what grama means. So there are a number of halachim to explain how grama is different. So some understand that grama focuses on time delay. Zohar happens right away, the wind steps in right now, and grama means it's not going to happen until a little bit later, some amount of time later. Related to that. Also, a connected but different point is some say it has to do with inevitability. But if something, Alpi Derech HaTeva, is basically definitely going to happen, so then you'll be chayiv. And grama is a situation where it's not 100%. Could also be a question of intent. Right? We saw that at the Shulta Kibari. Right? That if you are trying to carry out this action, so then you're chayiv for it, and that fits well with the Malachas Machshavas idea. While if you are not trying to necessarily, right? Remember we saw the Shulta Kibari says in the case of the Gemara, where you're going to put out a fire because the Caleb you're setting up is going to break. So there you could argue that even though you know the water can extinguish the fire, you're not interested in extinguishing the fire, you're interested in containing the fire. So if you could find a way to have the fire stay the exact same size that it is, you'd be happy too.
Drama.
But now we can have much as much evidence. Okay. Alright, thank you.
Turn off those for
a minute. Yeah, take credit for it. So, you should see how many different concepts can be used. Not just about me, but we're going to select to see how many different ways we can turn that into an educational experience. So, basically, I'm your lock. Okay. So, a lot of different things that I use for that. Okay, so essentially. Alright, anyway. So, those are three different mahalkim you can use. Those are three different rainas that end the Malchus and Skayamas. It's an ongoing educational experience. Okay, so far, three different mahalkim to distinguish between Grama and that Gemara. Right? If you say, like the Rosh, if you say it's limited to Zohar, you don't even need those mahalkim. But according to those Rishonim who see it more expansively, then we got to figure out where Grama is a tour. So maybe at least you have those three different mahalkim. The Achiezer has a tshuva, which is like kind of a twist on the Rush's view. The Rush basically saying that Zohra is always done like this, so therefore it counts.
What's the Valamor?
What about the Valamor?
Because you said the Valamor
in Zohra and Bora.
Yeah, maybe even though by definition.
Because of the Mishnah.
Right, and therefore you can be
back.
Right.
That's what the Rush could be saying that.
Right,
so,
I thought that also.
Yeah, the Rush could be saying that. But the Achiezer, but he could be saying something broader, which is related to what the Achiezer says. He could say that any malacha where the normal derech is to do it together with something else, you'll be chai. So essentially, grama becomes kind of a weirdness to us. And basically, if you're doing the malacha in a weird way, in a roundabout way, so it's not so much the fact that you're involved in some other force as much as it is the Rube Goldbergness of the position. And since you're doing it in a roundabout way, that is not the normal way of doing it straight. So then that's the patur. But if the malacha is normally done this way, even though it involves some other force, whatever it is, the wind or electricity or whatever is doing it, then that will be a malacha. So the Rush might be saying that too, but the Abiyazar would be expanding it to other malachas that theoretically are always that way or could become that way. You know, it's in 2030, it becomes that a certain malacha is always done from the wind, and that will also become the Chayiv Min HaTorah for that malacha. Okay, who is up? A bunch of hands up, so we'll go just in directional order. Okay, so Gil, Sammy, Tuvia, Jonathan?
Okay, yeah. So not to do the part, but in terms of the Moshava and that like, first night that you mentioned,
yes.
What's the difference between the last Moshava and the Shogi?
What's the difference between the last Moshava and Shogi?
Yeah.
Well, we see that the last Moshava is much broader than Shogi. Right, so Shogi is a sort of
But you're a kind of poor
Moshava. Correct. That Malachas Machshavas goes much broader and it exempts much more.
But what is the...
You're saying that maybe... You're saying that... What was the definition of the action or the consequence?
If we're saying that it's based on the Machshava and the action, the
right.
So what would be different in someone doing something for Shogi? How would his Machshava be different than you?
When somebody does, let's say, a Chil Shabbos for Shogi, let's say he writes on Shabbos. So he has full kavana to write. It doesn't have any of these exemptions. Right? He is writing intentionally. He is writing for the same reason they wrote in the Mishkan. He is writing with awareness of writing. He is successful in his writing. He's writing with two letters. He's writing in a way that's not so tofu. It doesn't have any of these exemptions. The only issue is that he just forgot that it was Shabbos. Or he forgot that writing is prohibited on Shabbos. So it meets all the standards to be a malacha. He's pater from a karba, he's hiding a karba, he's pater from the onesh because he didn't intend to be Machal Shabbos and he did it. But in a sense, it's worse than all this because it meets more of the standard of a malacha. He happens to forget that it's Shabbos or that writing is prohibited on Shabbos.
Hi. I understand. Is he saying something different than what a shinoi is, a falafel yad?
So who's he? Which shinoi?
Sorry, the roundabout.
Yeah, no, I think what he's saying is that grumma. Is shinoi is more you do something backwards or upside down. Here you're artificially inserting a few extra steps. So if the few extra steps are standard, you always do it that way. So what he's saying is that then that won't be called grama, that'll be called the normal way of doing the malacha. But if those steps are artificial, you know, you could have done it straight. For some reason you're placing your, like we call it, we all be too young to know about Rube Goldberg, who's a cartoonist who used to invent these crazy machines that took 50 steps to do something much more simple. So if you're going to have a Rube Goldberg approach, maybe that's what it is. It's a Rube Goldberg tour. That if you're doing something unnecessarily convoluted, so then that's called Brahma. But if it, by its very nature, it invokes other forces, which is the case by Zohar, we just don't know if it's limited to Zohar or if it should be expanded to other things as well. Sammy? Well, that's what Jonathan was asking. I'm saying, not necessarily. Yeah, not that you're doing it in a bad way or in a way that
shinoi.
Yeah, the shinoi somehow takes away from it. Here, it's not that there's anything bad in the way you're doing it or anything lacking. It's just unnecessarily convoluted.
Because
normally you would do it, because the assumption is you normally write with your right hand if you're a righty. Excuse the discriminatory example, but it's one of the classic examples of the plafiyat, that if a right-handed person writes with his left hand, so he normally writes with his right hand, not just out of habit, but because his right hand is stronger. And his right hand writes more effectively. So by choosing to do it with his left hand, he's going to have less control, he's going to have less machsheves, you know, less artistry.
Well, let's say, for example, depending, I guess, on how you hold your silverware, but a righty may normally cut with his left hand. But let's say now, it's kill achar yad now because it's not the normal way you do it, so you would cut with your right hand.
Right.
You would have to fork with your left hand.
Yeah, but again, that's going to slow you down because most of these kill achar yads are going to impede your your normal.
With your stronger hand, it should be better.
Except the reason you don't do that all the time is because you need to hold your knife.
And hip.
Yeah, no, that's better right, because that's the way it works better for you. So by switching it around, it's coming in the future. Okay.
I just want to point out that when we had a long time ago the weaving demonstration, so the guy in front of the
weaving demonstration, yeah.
The analogy of Kilaka Yada.
Uh huh.
When you're weaving, so normally you go like this. But a shoe would be go like this, at the back of your hand, Kilaka Yada.
And what how does that affect the process?
I don't remember, but like you wouldn't think it's like weird. So, I don't really remember how you weave, but like, I would imagine that if you're going like this, and you go backwards, that's just weird.
Does it slow down the process? Does it
it's a spin.
Make it happen less effectively?
You spin the spinner, so you want to twist it around, so to spin it, you're going like this.
And if you go backwards, then what happens?
I don't know.
Okay, let's assume that it impedes the process. So, this whole idea is fascinating, right? This opens up a whole new world here. So, it's a little harder to say with this area of machshava as a chiyuv that machshava is a condition. Right? Until now, I think it's a little easier to say that even all of these, if we group all of them together, the whole first 12 cases, and we can say that these are cases where it's sustainable to say that a malacha is a malacha, but it has to be machshavas. But the idea that something that wouldn't make the cut all of a sudden becomes a chiyuv because of machshavas. It's a little harder to say if you believe machshavas is conditional. If you believe machshavas is definitional, it's a little bit easier. Right, if you say that all of these are garnished because machshava is not there, so it's not even called a malacha, because malacha is machshava. That is its essence. So that is perhaps easier to say that machshava is so powerful, it can also create a malacha where there is none. And by the way, maybe we'll talk about it more tomorrow, there's a Chumash Rashba that says that there's some certain activities which are not on the 39, but can become a machshav, become a malacha because of its significance. So I think, tell me if you think I'm wrong, that the notion of machshavas as a machayev is easier to swallow if you believe that machshavas is fundamental to malachas machshavas, that it's definitional.
Machshavas or machshavas?
Same thing. If you believe that machshava is definitional, is core to the existence of a malacha, so then the idea that it flips around also as a chiyuv is easier to say. But if it's a condition, so then how can a condition create a chiyuv by itself? Condition is a necessary element, but it's not the definition. So if you have the necessary element but you didn't have the chiyuv to begin with, how could it be machayev? Do you agree that it's more intuitive that way? Now, could you interpret it any other way?
Maybe we're coming to the focus on the fact that it's machshav, that it's chashuv. Then it may be a meaning, it may be a clause. In order to be chayav.
Right. That was the first.
And yeah. I can still make it chayav.
I find that harder to say. And if it's a clause that has the power to create a chiyuv by itself.
Meaning it could be usher,
right?
But you just won't be chayiv without malachas machshavas.
So then maybe this comes back, if you want to say it that way, maybe it comes back to what Jonathan was asking a few minutes ago. Right? Jonathan was saying, why can't we invoke segregation as an example of malachas machshavas l'chiyuva? And I was saying back to him, no, it's not a great example because it just cancels out our p'tur. Right? That you're a potter for a davar she'eino miskaven. And segregation brings you back in. So it's less of a machayiv as it is something that negates the p'tur. But maybe that structure is relevant here. Maybe we should bring back what he was saying. And that these cases, so Zora, Chotokos, what are these? These aren't cases where a malacha was formed out of nowhere. These are cases where you have something that's essentially a malacha. Zora is an active borer. right? That whole tofels should be an act of ksiva. But maybe they have technical exemptions. So Zora is being done through Rava, and Chotokos is an inferior form of Ksiva, whatever the nature is. So they have their Malach identity already. And they're Pater for technical reasons. So Machsheves, as a condition, can override a technical Ptur. Maybe that is compatible with Baba Kama and with Iran. I think it's much harder for the Rashba, but we didn't have time to get into in detail about really creating the Malach out of nowhere. I think it's easier to say, okay, here you have Ksiva, you have Borer slash Zora. They are Malachas already on the list. They just are situations where you should have technical Ptur, so Machsheves overrides it. But it's not going to accommodate everything that was ever said in this realm. Vasha Weiss, by the way, in commenting on that, Rashba we just alluded to, so he knows, we've commented on this earlier in the year, that he thinks it relates to, but it's not the same thing, but it's evocative of the Yerushalmi. You may recall, we talked about the Yerushalmi earlier in the year, that Yerushalmi talks about Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish learning through all of the Malachos, and they found 39 toldos for every Malacha, and whatever they couldn't figure out where it goes, they put it under Maka and Mepatish. And the question is obvious, you know, that we always assume that a Malacha is a Malacha because it looks like it's on the list, because it looks like it's part of the Mishkan. So if it doesn't match, then why should it go anywhere? It should be Mutter. What do you mean if it didn't fit into any of the other categories, it went to the Maka and Mepatish? So apparently what they understood is there is an objective concept of a tikkun, that if an action is making a difference in the world, it's a tikkun, and it deserves to be a malacha. So if it matches one of the existing 38, let's say, so fine, it should be in that category. But if it doesn't match anything else, so then we'll call it makom hapakish. But it starts off getting its identity by being a tikkun. So that's a little bit similar to this idea that machsheves itself creates a malacha even out of scratch, even out of nowhere, but again, that's a more machudish approach. So this whole idea of machsheves v'chiyuva is a striking idea. What's really interesting is this is what kind of throws the monkey wrench into things. We mentioned some of these sources are more grounded, some of them are less grounded, but malachas machsheves as a chiyuv is closer to being an explicit gemara than almost anything else here. Right, because that Gemara in Bava Kama does, it's a back and forth there also in the Gemara, but at least it is pretty clear that Gemara, right? So basically the closest sources really have Misasek, Mekalkel, and Zora. Those are the top three in terms of Talmudic support that they are talking about this. Okay, so I need the music to get more dramatic for a moment. So do we have a working thesis that's going to bring all this together? We won't know until tomorrow. And tomorrow also, whatever the introduction I gave about kopalistic things, we didn't even get the most kopalistic. That, Bez Hashem, tomorrow we will get to with your indulgence. And then, finishing up a few points of Lachas Machsheves, go to Chazara for a few days and then to Lush. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And, sorry? Yeah, the hope is definitely... yes, I'm, yes, I'm.